Hi, this is Paul. I've got a CRC playlist on my channel that where the videos that focus on the Christian Reformed Church are concentrated. Obviously, a lot of attention in the Christian Reformed Church is being paid to the conflict over same-sex marriage, how that is rolling out. I've covered it in the channel through a variety of videos. There's some interesting new developments in this area. One of the videos that I don't often make videos that I don't publish, but one of the videos that I made and didn't publish had to do with the gravamen procedure in the Christian Reformed Church. Now, churches have a rather annoying habit of lapsing into Latin at some point, which I don't know how much sense that makes for the Christian Reformed Church. Perhaps it should lapse into Dutch or Greek or Hebrew rather than Latin, but so be it. The gravamen process, well, I'll pull up that website. So the video that I made, it had sound issues too. It's part of the reason why it never got posted, and I wondered how good it would be for the channel beyond the Christian Reformed Church, was I walked through this piece on the denominational website, Frequently Asked Questions about Synod 2022 and the Human Sexuality Report. And it's based on the gravamen procedure, which is in the Christian Reformed Church order, that I had simply taken as assumed, like I think many other Christian Reformed Church ministers, about how to process a gravamen. And there were two types of gravamen that were asserted. One would be a confessional difficulty gravamen, where, for example, and I think this was most often imagined to be used, let's say, in a situation which isn't terribly uncommon in the CRC, for example, where you maybe have someone join your local church who doesn't believe in infant baptism, but in almost all other cases, they would seem like they could serve, and so they might serve on council, but when it came to matters of infant baptism, they would keep quiet. And then there was a confessional revision gravamen where you believe that the doctrinal statements, the confessions of the Christian Reformed Church, the Belgic Confession, the Heidelberg Catechism, and the Canons of Dort were in error, and you should convince the Synod of the Christian Reformed Church of your position rather than the established position of the church, and then the church would change its doctrinal stance. And this document basically assumes that these two types of gravamen that are possible. And so, is the submission of a confessional difficulty gravamen a way of exercising a local option on the issue? No, not really. But basically, the understanding of a confessional difficulty gravamen would be that for the most part, you would say to your local council, I disagree with the position, in this case, the human sexuality, the position stated by Synod 2022. I disagree with the position, but I am not going to politic or try to get the church to change. Just allow me to quietly dissent and we can both go about our business. And this was sort of the understanding of how this would work in the Christian Reformed Church. Now, it's helpful to understand that in the Christian Reformed Church, there is a denominational seminary, Calvin Seminary, and there's a professor of church order at the seminary that teaches seminarians the church order. And that professor of church order used to be Henry DeMore when I was at the seminary, and more recently is Kathy Smith. The professor of church order was often called upon to give advice to synods as to what the standing and tradition of the Christian Reformed Church would be in a particular matter. And so this approach, and I'll put this link in the comments section, this approach was basically the assumption leaving Synod 2022. Now, part of the new interesting developments of the denomination is how quickly technology is disrupting old patterns and habits in the denomination. Currently, There is the this is what I'm looking for. Currently, the two websites where you can find a lot of material about the current conflict are the Abide Project, who are sort of the traditionalists, and the Hesed Project, who are sort of the progressives. And between these two websites, there are a host of materials about all sorts of things. Part of the way the Christian Reformed Church works at Synod is that members, churches, and councils can send overtures or communications to Synod to feed into the process that will happen in June. These overtures are then sent to advisory committees. The advisory committees chew on them, and things only get to the floor of Synod through those advisory committees. Now, I am not going to Synod this summer. I have a son who is graduating from college, but I do plan to pay a lot of attention to Synod, and because I am not a delegate, I should be able to make some videos in much more depth about how this thing unfolds. Now, one of the more interesting developments for me is Cedric Parcells, who's a minister in the Christian Reformed Church, recently got permission from his council to basically take a week and dig into the question of gravamina. Gravamina is plural for gravamen. And he wrote a pretty significant piece on this process, which I think has the potential to alter the way this thing goes. It's a very well written piece. He clearly did his homework, and he basically takes on Professor Kathy Smith from Calvin Seminary in terms of her interpretation, which backed the denominational frequently asked questions site. He begins by going through the history of the gravamen process, and a few things stand out in this history, one of which is it seems to have most often been used by seminary professors and their difficulties with statements. We don't see a lot of cases about Christian Reformed ministers and their difficulties. There was a Krominger case in 1945 to 1947, where a professor, Professor D.H. Krominger, Professor Krominger was professor of church history at Calvin Theological Seminary from 1928 until his death in 1947. More to the point, it was a premillennialist. And in early 1940s, Erdmann's publishing company approached Professor Krominger to ask whether he would like to write a book on the last things, an offer that he gladly accepted. As the book was going to print, however, he discovered to his dismay that some of his views on the last things were in conflict with a Belgian confession. Because he was a man of integrity, Professor Krominger told Erdmans to remove the offending chapters from his book, and then he promptly communicated his disagreement to Synod in 1945. Looking at Professor Krominger's communication to Synod in 1945, it is understandable why Professor Smith might include that Professor Krominger's communication was that he would call a confessional difficulty gravamen. Now, Cedric sort of goes through this and notes that these major historical examples of this process really all seem to be confessional revision examples of it. This particular example sort of never reached culmination because Professor Krominger died in 1947, making the issue moot. Now, one of the things that he does nicely go through is a bunch of different other historical examples. Throughout the 1950s and 60s, the Christian Reformed Church continued to face other confessional challenges. In 1952, Calvin CRC in Grand Rapids, Michigan, sent an overture to Synod on behalf of Professor Clarence Borsma of Calvin College. again, another college professor. Their overture urged Synod to respond to six objections that Professor Borsma had raised against the Belgian Confession. According to Calvin CRC, it is very important for Synod to address Professor Borsma's objections, not only because the objections were beyond the consistory's competence to adjudicate, but also more importantly because all ministers, elders, and deacons, professors of Calvin College and seminary, as well as many Christian school teachers, are required to express their unqualified agreement with the Belgic Confession. Now, this is really quite critical because when I made the video about autodidacts, that really sort of gets into this. It's usually the case that the majority of members of the Christian Reformed Church were just be asked, do you agree with the teachings of the church? Sure, I haven't heard anything I disagree with, so yes. Okay. How many of the teachings of the church do you know? Have you read the Heidelberg Catechism, the Belgian Confession, and the Canons of Dort? And if, in fact, you've read them, do you understand them? And to what degree do you understand them? There was another controversy that's often called the love of God controversy. The controversy over Professor Borsma's objections carried on until Synod 1961, when Synod essentially said that it had had enough. It was not going to revise the Belgic Confession. It was not long, however, before a new confessional crisis arose. In other words, what tended to happen is that you would have very intelligent, sophisticated theologians coming to Synod, asking it to adjudicate a number of issues. And now, synodical delegates back then were two ministers and two elders from each classis in the denomination, and Synod met for 2 weeks. These days, Synod meets for 1 week, and you have a ministerial delegate, an elder delegate, a deacon delegate, and then a fourth delegate who might be a commissioned pastor, might be an elder. It could be any of the other offices as the fourth delegate. It's often another minister of the word. So you'd have these issues that would arise. They would go to Synod, and Synod would sort of often not quite know what to do with them. Synod did not want to alter or adjust the confessions necessarily, and Synod would often just try to find a way out of this. They didn't necessarily want to take out these high-status individuals, but they wanted to sort of maybe shed some light on it, but not have it go away. The next year, in 1962, Harold Decker, professor of missions at Calvin Theological Seminary from 1955 to 1987, caused an uproar by writing an article in the Reformed Journal in which he gave the impression that he disagreed with the doctrine of limited atonement. This controversy, known as the Love of God controversy, continued until 1967. Now notice, these things, that's 1962 to 1967, these things take years. When the article was written, the professor wasn't immediately dismissed or anything like that. Synod reaffirmed the Reformed doctrine of the Lords of God's love and reprimanded Professor Decker for having caused so much confusion in the church by his ambiguous and abstract way of writing. Acts of Synod, 1967. Both before and during the Love of God controversy, there was strong evidence that the CRC's official policy was still that of unqualified subscription. And that's the major point that Cedric makes throughout this, that the assumption in the Christian Reformed Church with respect to what was the form of subscription and what is now called the covenant of office bearers has always been unqualified subscription to the denomination's doctrinal statements. In 1966, just as the 62-67 controversy was coming to its end, van der Ploeg returned in the Banner to the topic of confessional subscription. An article entitled Form of Subscription, to Sign or Not Sign, van der Ploeg stated that in the CRC, by affixing their signatures to the form of subscription, office bearers in the CRC say they heartily believe and are persuaded that all the articles and points of doctrine contained in the confessions do fully agree with the Word of God. And this had been affirmed again and again. This is a very strong paper, I think, and the results of this paper have been put into an overture, which went from Cedric's local church to the Classis, was approved by Classis, and is now going on to Synod. And as with many issues like these, even though everybody sorts of wants to go to Synod, they're going to fight about same-sex marriage, the big fight might, in fact, be about what on earth is the form of subscription and what does it mean? And then in part four, he takes on the case of Harry Bohr. In part three, we saw that throughout the 1950s and 60s, the Christian Reformed Church's official policy with regard to confessional subscription was the same as it had always been. Ministers, elders, and deacons, as well as professors at Calvin College and Calvin Theological Seminary, were required to subscribe unconditionally to all doctrines contained in the confessions. In other words, none of this idea of a confessional difficulty gravamen where you can go to your local council, basically state, this one part I don't agree with, but everything else, I'm good. I'm a part of the body. The local council says, you're one of ours. You can continue to serve in office. And this also gets into the issue of who supervises the office bearer. And in the Christian Reformed Church, it's the local council who supervises the office bearer. The character in the heart of our story is named Dr. Harry Bohr, 1913 to 1999. By his own admission, Dr. Bohr had harbored deep misgivings about the doctrine of reprobation since at least 1963. In fact, in that year, he wrote a gravamen to send to Synod, which would have asked for the doctrine to be removed from the canons, but he never sent it. The love of God controversy was heating up at the time, and he did not want to appear to be making a political statement in support of his friend Harold Decker, professor of missions at Calvin Seminary. After the love of God controversy had more or less ended in 1967, Dr. Bohr decided once again to take up the work of trying to get the CRC to revise the canons of Dort. On furlough from the mission field in 1968, Dr. Bohr approached his consistory and asked them to provide, with biblical basis, the doctrine of reprobation. The council refused to do so, saying that his request for information needed to take the form of a gravamen, confessional revision gravamen. As a result, Dr. Bohr appealed to Classis Chicago South, a request which the Classis also refused for the same reason as his consistory. And again, what you sort of find here is the autodidact issue. You've got these, how can we say it? We've got these very capable ministers in the Christian Reformed Church who are often not local pastors. My guess is Harry Bohr was teaching seminary in Nigeria. And they're raising rather complex issues to lay people and local ministers who are basically dealing with everything. And it's like all of this theological sophistication, it's probably not we're probably not able to actually engage with these questions. Now, this raises all sorts of really interesting and difficult issues. And so this got brought to Synod. And not only did Harry Bohr have questions about the doctrine of reprobation, but he also then began talking about the form of subscription itself. At this point, Dr. Bohr had the opportunity to appeal to Synod, but he held off yet again for several years in preparation for his discussions with his consistory and Classis. Dr. Bohr had engaged in extensive study of the form of subscription. He had come to the conclusion that the form of subscription itself needed to be revised before the CRC could adequately take up his request for a revision of the canons. Accordingly, from October 1970 to August 1971, Dr. Bohr published 9 articles in the Reformed Journal, which he attempted to make his case for the revision of the form of subscription. Dr. Bohr's hope was that someone would read his articles and lead the charge to revise the form of subscription. But after several months of waiting, it became clear he was going to have to make that request of that revision himself. In other words, everybody's busy. Nobody wants to take this up. There's nothing earned. This is not an easy thing. Although Professor Bohr had a number of things that he did not like about the forum subscription. He had two primary criticisms. First, Dr. Bohr argued that the forum subscription's approach to creedal revision did not reflect a reformed doctrine of the church, and in particular, the reformed doctrine of the priesthood of all believers. According to Professor Bohr, as written, the forum subscription limited the number of people who could debate any proposed confessional revision. In his interpretation, only members of the assembly handling the gravamen could debate it. In other words, office bearers, professors were required to remain silent. Now, this is very interesting because it has to do with the mechanics of a confessional conversation in the denomination. And his argument was that it was too limited. It was limited by the synods that could participate. He would like to see other learned members of the Christian Reformed community participate in it. But of course, you're also going to have the vast majority of the Christian Reformed Church participate in this. And what would that mean when 99% of the denomination would probably not have the competence to actually debate such an issue? Now this gets into a lot of things, one of which is that if we imagine, especially before the days of the printing press, except for those very unusual monks and scholarly types who could afford to read books, the teachings of the church, the church in that sense sort of had a monopoly on the formation of its people. All the people would know would be what the people would know by experience and by what the church would tell them. Now, the printing press is, of course, a major disruption in this. Now, suddenly, you've got all sorts of people writing books, and those people are going to be influencing the mass of people beneath. If you look at the videos that I've been doing about Vatican I, this question about councils versus, let's say, the papacy. We can look at this as sort of commoners versus autodidacts or experts. All of these issues come into play. Now, again, if you go back to the book that I'm reading about Vatican I, one of the ways that the Roman Catholic Church tried to deal with this issue was to basically decide which books were okay for people to read and which ones weren't. And because they couldn't control printing presses, you know, Martin Luther couldn't be silenced. So then you have things like book burnings where, well, we're going to get rid of these books. But, well, book burnings are pretty good for book sales. And as it turns out, you can't really outburn the printing press. So this very quickly gets into the question of how does a body like a church make decisions? And of course, if you look at the Protestant Reformation, these issues are all over the place. The priesthood of all believers, you find exactly the same issues in the political sphere. You look at, let's say, ideas of Jeffersonian democracy. And of course, you can go all the way back to ancient Athens and the citizenry of a city making decisions about the direction of that particular body. Now, this thing with Harry Bohr went on year after year after year. Bohr's second criticism of the form of subscription was that it required an unconditional, wholehearted subscription to all the doctrines contained in the confessions. This, he argued, put the confessions at the same level as the authority of Scripture and made virtually everyone who signed the form into a double-minded hypocrite because very few, if any, actually believed everything the confessions taught. For example, hardly anyone believed that Paul wrote the book of Hebrews or that they should detest the Anabaptists. Accordingly, to require the office bearers to sign the form of subscription without mental reservation was an act of spiritual abuse. I wonder, maybe I should have Cedric on the channel. There is a video on Abide where Cedric does an interview with respect to this, so maybe Cedric and I should do something like this. It could be fun. This goes back and forth, synod after synod. Class of Chicago South refused to adopt Dr. Bohr's overture. Nevertheless, it did have a sympathy with his first criticism. As a result, the class's overture sent in 1973 to adopt a line on the form of subscription which they hope would address their and Dr. Bohr chair's criticism. Dr. Bohr himself appealed the decision of his classes. Accordingly, SID in 1973 has had two overtures before it, having to do with revising the form of subscription. SID in 1973 was also the synod that provided the homosexuality report, which is kind of at the basis of what had been at the basis until synod really 2022 sort of pushed it much more into confessional territory. When synod 1974 met in June of that year, it had a number of overtures on its docket, both for and against the ratification of Synod's 1973 decision. Because of the importance of the form of subscription for both the life of the CRC and its ecumenical relationship, Synod 1974 decided to postpone ratification once again. At the same time, they appointed a committee to study the revision of the form of subscription. This committee would solicit the views of CRC churches as well as college and seminary. They would also communicate with our Reformed ecumenical partners. Having gotten Synod 1973 and 1974 to act on revising the form of subscription, Dr. Bohr decided that it was time had finally come for him to start pressing on what he truly wanted, which was to revise the canons of Dort. Instead of submitting a gravamen, however, as he had planned to do in 1963, Dr. Bohr decided to send a communication to Synod. So this fight went all the way into the 1980s, and in retirement, Dr. Bohr was writing some books about this. And again, the main point of Cedric Parsons' posting here is that Dr. Smith's perspective on gravamen isn't justified by the history of it. Now, what really seemed to develop in the Christian Reformed Church is this sense of a confessional difficulty gravamen. And this, in fact, was used a number of times. Now, where this came from, it isn't quite clear, and I suspect this is going to be something that synods are going to have to weigh in on directly, because it's obviously directly going to impact not just one or two professors in the church, but potentially dozens, if not hundreds, of office bearers within the church, and whether or not this is a good thing. And he addresses this again. This is a very worthwhile thing to read through. In this series, I have sought to lay out a more accurate history of the Christian Reformed Church's approach to gravamina. Contrary to Professor Smith's claim, the CRC's official policy from 1857 to 1976 was that our office bearers had to subscribe unconditionally to the doctrines contained in their confessions. In other words, they couldn't basically say, I subscribe to all but these, and sort of have an understanding with their local church council that they didn't subscribe to these others, and they would promise to not politic or make trouble for the church on the basis of what they disagreed with. And myself, and I think generations of Christian Reformed Church clergy that have been taught this, even though most of us never filed a gravamen or saw any gravamens filed about much of anything, just thought, well, this is the way it is. Synod 1976's invention of confessional difficulty gravamen did nothing to change that policy. If so, they were the idea, where did the idea come from that councils can allow office bearers to take exceptions to our confessions? The answer to this question is relatively simple. Some churches and institutions have found the CRC's policy toward subscription too costly to put into practice. For example, suppose you serve a smaller church and there's a person who your council believes would make a great elder or deacon, but there is one problem. The person in question cannot sign the covenant of office bearers. Maybe they disagree with our doctrine of infant baptism, election, or limited atonement. What do you do? Or consider the minister who signed the covenant of office bearers 10 years ago in good faith, but now disagrees with the confessions. After reading Barth, perhaps they no longer believe that the Bible is the infallible word of God. After reading Walterstorff, perhaps they no longer believe in God's eternality. After reading a synodical report, perhaps they no longer believe that Christ's spiritual order of his church requires a congregation to have elders and deacons. They grew up in the CRC. It played an important role in their Dutch self-identity, or maybe even their non-Dutch self-identity. All their credentialing was prepared them for ministry in the Christian Reformed Church, and their work experience has been in the CRC. They enjoy their CRC community. Their kids go to the local Christian school. Their family lives in the parsonage. They come to you and your counsel to explain that they no longer agree with the confessions on these points. What do you do? Now, again, my guess is that many of these would be elders and deacons, but I would say that likely many elders and deacons either have a degree of ignorance or simply silent gravamen that, you know, maybe they've got qualms or questions about this thing or that thing, or they don't understand it. But for the most part, it doesn't seem to impact their lives, and it doesn't seem to impact how well they serve the church. And this goes on and on and on. These and similar scenarios have played out in the CRC for decades. And because councils didn't want to have people leave, have to leave people off their list of potential elders and deacons, and because they didn't want to instruct their ministers to submit to confessional revision gravamens, because, again, pretty much the only people who filed these things were seminary professors who could take on these issues and usually take on these issues in a way that very, very few other Christian Reformed Church people and therefore Christian Reformed assemblies couldn't really engage with. Perhaps the oldest solution has been for councils and office bearers who turned a blind eye to their colleagues' voiced disagreement with the confessions. Writing in December 1976, Harry Bohr wrote in the Reform Journal that among the more or less theologically conscious elements of the CRC, a common acceptance of a certain unmeasured, undefined slice of the creeds has become, let us say, negotiable. According to Bohr, when working among members in a self-conscious theological community, a minister could openly reject certain doctrines without fear of reprisal. Other doctrines they could reject, for like reprobation, but they were more or less quiet about it so as not to upset the unenlightened. And some doctrines, they would not openly deny at all because they were considered too central to the community of faith. In other words, you sort of had a canon within the confessions. And everybody, there's sort of a community standard, there was an Overton window, and people sort of had a sense of these things are flexible, but these things are core. And as with many things in a church, that sort of gets worked out in oral tradition more than necessarily on paper. Bohr believed that this whole situation was dishonest and unworthy of a Church of Christ, but it was, he argued, the unofficial arrangement that the CRC's leadership, right, left, and center, had more or less agreed to tolerate. Uncomfortable with turning a blind eye, however, some churches in the 1980s and 1990s chose a more radical solution. They believed that the best way forward was to simply not require office bearers to subscribe to confessions at all. This was new to me. I had no idea that anyone was doing this. In an overture to Synod 2004, Classis British Columbia Southeast admitted that many of its churches no longer use the form of subscription because many individuals had difficulty in signing it. Synod 2004 mildly rebuked these churches, but it also agreed to send out questionnaires to inquire of each congregation as to the methods by which the church complies with provisions of Article 5. The results of that study led to our current covenant of office bearers. In other words, they did a study. They found that some churches weren't practicing it. Now, again, you're going to have layers of this. Is a local church practicing it? As a classis practicing it, well, that would be a much bigger deal. Generally speaking, at the beginning of a classis meeting, if you've never been a delegate to that classis before, you're asked to come forward to the table and sign the covenant of office bearers for that classis. When you go to synod, you have to, in a sense, they don't actually have you make a big list and everybody sign on a piece of paper, but you basically stand up to confess your agreement with the covenant of office bearers. It is this broader context of the church trying to evade CRC's official policy of unconditional subscription that some churches most likely started misusing in Cedric's opinion, but this had sort of become the practice of the church. Professor Smith, in her summary, says that when the Church of the Savior in South Bend, Indiana, asked Dr. Alvin Plantinga whether he would serve as elder, Dr. Plantinga submitted a confessional difficulty gravamen in which he expressed his disagreement with the Synod of Dort's teaching on election and reprobation. Professor Smith says that she cannot exactly pinpoint when this took place, but since Dr. Plantinga was at Notre Dame from 83 to 2010, we can definitely say that this was at some time period. Again, you've had, now I just named someone that many of you will recognize whether or not you're CRC. And again, this is someone that can stand up and who's going to argue with Alvin Plantinga? It's like, we don't want him leaving the church, so okay. I don't know exactly how this came about, that someone at Church of the Savior thought they could use the confessional difficulty gravamen in this way, but it was the council's own invention. Now, this kind of thing is very common in the church. I gotta think about, there are things I can and can't say online. This kind of thing is very common in the church. Church law is made up as much in case law as it is sort of in the church order. And so recently at a classes meeting, I did something that I had never seen anybody else do to kind of get that classes, our classes meeting, out of a problem. And I conferred with the other synodical deputies that were there, these guys that I serve with, because I'm a synodical deputy as well. And, you know, it was innovative. We'll see if it helps. Chances are good that myself, if I'm a synodical deputy in another classes meeting or some of these other synodical, they might say, hey, you know, there was a similar situation in classes Central California, and Paul Vanderclay did this, therefore try this. And if these things happen in enough places, well, suddenly it becomes church practice. And then once it becomes church practice, at some point, maybe there's some tension with the church order, or people feel tensions about another point of church order, and it goes to synod, and then a church order gets adjusted. In other words, these things usually sort of bubble up from below. And especially if you've got someone like Alvin Plantinga, you know, who really wants to debate, you know, elder from small church Indiana is going to rise to debate Alvin Plantinga on free will and determinism. Yeah, that'll go well. Or did the council reach out, and this is a very interesting paragraph. Was it the council's own invention? Or did the council reach out to someone in some way to Henry DeMoor, professor of church order at Calvin Seminary from 86 to 2010? We don't know. What we do know, however, is that Church of the Savior did was illicit, at least according to Cedric. Professor DeMoor, in his last connection, I mentioned Professor DeMoor in this last connection because I think Professor DeMoor was probably done more of that than anyone to mainstream this third approach to confessional evasion. Now, obviously, there's an axe to grind in this article, and one article does not church order make. This is why I think this should be read seriously by people going to synod. But now, again, you're going to have, you know, 200 people from all over the U.S. and Canada who come into this place, some of them, you know, picked by their various, how well will they be able to read through this? How well will they be able to process it, et cetera, et cetera? You have all those kinds of questions. As far as I found, Professor DeMoor's 2010 Church Order Commentary is the first source to suggest that confessional difficulty gravamen permits councils to grant office bearers an exception from having to confess all of the doctrine contained in our confessions. Now, this is very interesting because basically he's saying the dude put this in his commentary and his commentary has become practice, and therefore a whole bunch of us just simply assume this is the way it is. He appears to make his case completely dependent on the phrase in our church order that says a council must render a judgment on an office bearer's confessional difficulty gravamen. According to Professor DeMore, this judgment is about whether the council can tolerate the office bearer's disagreement. But as I have argued before, the accuracy of this interpretation is highly improbable. There is nothing in our history to suggest that Synod 1976 intended to allow exceptions by way of confessional difficulty. Gravamine and CRC commentators from Harry Bohr to Bob Godfrey were still saying this in the late 1980s, that the CRC required unconditional subscription. Now, this is a powerful point that Parsons makes here, because it's a very believable point if you understood the denomination. But what develops is also a rather pragmatic way to deal with the fact that some of the original points that Harry Bohr was making had a lot of validity. How really workable, how honest is this process? This could get very interesting at Synod, because if we look at conservatives, moderates, and progressives, the big shift that happened in Synod 2022 was that moderates pretty much were in agreement with conservatives, so the conservatives won. The moderates are always sort of the swing vote. If the conservatives are like, okay, it's time to sort of purge the denomination, that's going to make moderates nervous, because moderates are going to look around and say, well, you could burn down the house to save it? Is that where we're going with this? And this go-along-to-get-along attitude that moderates often have, that, in fact, could win. Now, this is all very, very interesting. There are a host of other issues that we often talk about on this channel that come in here. For example, since 2016, Classis Grand Rapids East has had a study on same-sex marriage that they have. You can get to it right from their classical website. And nobody kicked them out of the church for that. It wasn't until Neyland Avenue communicated to the denomination during the COVID pandemic that they were going to ordain a woman who was living in a same-sex marriage as a deacon in the church. And then suddenly things sort of went into action. You have propositional belief, which subscription really sort of monitors, but you have procedural knowledge and you have participatory knowledge that really gets sticky. And what we've seen is that in many cases, churches don't act until someone else acts. So part of what I think we're going to see in this is Synod having to clarify this confessional difficulty gravamen formally, if they do so, because the Christian Reformed Church is a very young denomination, and there's a lot of practice in the Christian Reformed Church that develops quickly and isn't necessarily on the books as such. And usually Synod has to decide to make something official or to crack down on something or figure out what to do with it. And again, part of the culture of the Christian Reformed Church has been practical in that you don't want to cut off churches and classes, but it's at a point now where it seems inevitable that you're going to lose churches and perhaps even classes, and then you have the question of, well, just how many and for what might you lose, and who are you really, and where are your boundaries and guidelines? So I know this is pretty nerdy, but one of the interesting things. So here Neil Shenvey had a talk with Abide. We're all living in the same internet pool. If you go to Abide's homepage and you see sort of their list of things, you can find things from, let's say, the gospel from the wider web, all these articles from the Gospel Coalition. If you go to Hesed, if you go to the Hesed Project, then you'll find other things pulled in from other websites as well. So what's happening here is by no means just within the Christian Reformed Church. So anyway, I hope this isn't a waste of time for some of you, but here it is.